Good afternoon. I call this meeting of Senate Resources Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:34 p.m. on Monday, February 14th, 2022. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. And also let the record reflect that we have a quorum present today. Senators Von Imhoff, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Keel, myself, Senator Rivak, Senator Machicki is excused, and we have other members of the committee conducting other business in the building. On today's agenda, we have one item, SB 180 Passenger Vessel Environmental Compliance. This is the first time that the committee has heard this bill, and it is my intent to hear the bill, take testimony, and we'll set it aside so members can review, prepare questions, and pick it up another day. So we'll jump right into it. Here to present the bill are Emma Pokin, the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation, and Randy Bates, Director, Division of Water, Department of Environmental Conservation. If you folks could go ahead and come forward, thank you very much for being here today. Put yourself or selves on the record and walk us through your presentation.
Good afternoon, Senator Rivak, members of the committee. I'm Emma Pokon, the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Environmental Conservation, joined by Director Bates.
Good afternoon, Randy Bates, Director of Water, Department of Environmental Conservation.
So we're here to talk about the commercial passenger vessel environmental compliance bill today. We had a couple hearings a couple years back before COVID disrupted legislative session. And before that, I actually had been the bill drafter over at the Department of Law on the earlier version, so I'm especially pleased to be here today and be able to talk to you about DEC's vision for the future of our regulatory program for cruise ships. Since that last version of the bill was heard, we've taken a little time. Obviously, COVID has been difficult on the industry and on port communities. We took the time to take a step back and sort of evaluate the program, to talk to the communities and stakeholders some more, do a little bit more water quality work, and think through some more of the details for what we want the program to look like. So just to kind of start out as a baseline context, DEC regulates all sorts of industries in Alaska that discharge waters, from resource extraction to seafood processors, municipal wastewater treatment facilities, and construction of housing and, of course, commercial passenger vessels. We take that work seriously, and we expect the industries that we regulate to also take that seriously and to engage in that work and take the protection of the environment as a primary goal in their operations. And I guess in addition, I wanted to kind of discuss a little bit that some of the provisions of the statute that we're proposing to amend were put in place in 2006 by a ballot initiative. And we think that that was a pretty clear message from Alaskans that they expect also that those environmental compliance requirements will be taken seriously and that we'll have a robust regulatory program. We think that what we're proposing, we're bringing to you today, will do that, we're aiming to better protect water quality and human health and the environment, and that we're doing it in a way that's a more effective use of the available funds. So with that, I'll turn it over to Director Bates to talk a little bit about our experience in the last couple of years and our experience implementing the current statutes and what we're proposing going forward.
Good afternoon, Randy Bates, Director of Water. Very pleased, privileged, and happy to be here. Happy Valentine's Day for all of you as well. Good to be here. As Deputy Commissioner Pokon mentioned, it should come as no surprise we take our responsibility to protect human health and the environment very seriously. We expect all industries, operators, and facilities to comply with the rules and the discharge requirements. I want to talk a little bit, this first slide, about what we have done for the last couple years, our oversight in 2021. And we have currently one full-time marine engineer on staff. We have one environmental program specialist dedicated, and we have two part-time environmental program specialists dedicated to the oversight of the cruise passenger vessel compliance program. We will be recruiting for one additional marine engineer coming up and one more program specialist within the next few months to round out our staffing so that we have a good, robust group to be able to visit all the vessels that we intend to visit this summer. It should also go, I'm happy to answer questions at any time, yeah, as you guys see fit.
Great. Senator Von Imhoff has a question.
So thank you. So in 2020, were there any cruise ships here in 2020?
Through the chair, Senator, there were no cruise ships in 2020. We had 21 cruise vessels that visited the state in 2021, 13 small vessels, 8 large vessels. And the distinguishing characteristic between large and small is the small vessels have berths, the berth where you sleep in your bunk room, between 50 berths and 249 berths. Anything 250 and above is considered a large vessel. And that's important as I walk through here because it's a distinguishing characteristic on how we manage cruise vessels. It's based on their small versus large passenger capacity.
I actually have more questions.
Mm-hmm. Senator Von Imhoff.
So I think I recall that your department continued to take water samples all through 2020, even there was no cruise ship here. And what did you find?
Through the chair, Senator, great. You're covering a few of the points that I wanted to make in terms of what we did in 2020 as well as 2021. We did take, in the absence of cruise ships, as unfortunate or as opportunistic as it was, we had no cruise ships in 2020. We had a limited cruise season that came late in the year in 2021. And what that gave us was a unique, very unique opportunity to go out and do water quality sampling in ports, port communities, that see cruise ships, as well as some common corridor areas where there's normal passenger traffic that goes through there, where there would be more discharging going on in those vessels. It was a wonderful opportunity to get baseline data out there with the absence of cruise ships and then limited cruise vessel information. We did see high bacteria levels in ports, even in the absence of cruise ships. We did not see any exceedances in the common corridor areas. We're continuing to, coming in 2022, we plan to continue that water quality sampling. As we see the cruise industry return back to normal, we'll see a heavier load. We expect in a normal year, we're upward around 60 vessels, and we'll be able to sample the areas, the same areas that we have been for the last couple of years, and see if there's a difference and see if there's any impact, both from the large and the small vessels, manage accordingly.
One last follow-up,
Senator.
So just to confirm, so you did see in 2020 a significant bacterial impact in ports just from the cities and the towns and whomever. They're just normal daily discharge. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator, that is correct.
Okay. So it's not all the cruise ships then.
Through the chair, Senator. That was a question we asked, and we've heard it's cruise ships. We've heard the concerns associated with cruise ships. We also recognize, and some of the work that we have been doing in our port communities has been to evaluate what's happening in these communities. What are the discharges look like? If we're seeing exceedances, can we identify, can we target or figure out what they are DNA-wise? Is it dogs? Is it humans? What is it? We actually have markers we can evaluate. Like I said, in 2020, in the absence of cruise vessels, we really bolstered up that sampling plan, went out, found data, and found that in the absence of those cruise ships, the very communities, and particularly around some of their boat harbors, smaller boat harbors where you have fishing fleets or liveaboards, there was a higher incidence of human-traced bacterial concentrations.
So last comment, Senator, and then I'll
Senator Von Imhoff.
What would be wonderful, if I think follow-up to this committee, would be a bar graph that shows, 2018, 2019, then 2020, and then 21 for whatever it's worth, and then 2022, we're assuming we're going to see numbers hopefully on or around pre-pandemic levels. And I think to see what the data is in various different ports, you choose which ports, just to see the change of no cruise ships with cruise ships. How big is the change, if at all? And I think to see a bar graph, I'm assuming you've been collecting the data for several years now.
Through the chair, Senator. This particular sampling protocol has been in place since 2020, where we had additional funding that was built into our base budget allocation. We developed a little bit more robust sampling program than we've had in the past. So it's not necessarily comparable to pre-2020. I will give you all the data we have, make some nice pie charts or bar graphs that show exactly what we're seeing. We will dig up as much data as we have because there are, we do have sampling protocols in those ports that date for several years prior to that.
Thank you very much.
Oh, we would very much like that if you could if you could get that to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair, if I may add as well, I think we'll get to it a little bit later on in the presentation, but one of the impacts that we think we're seeing, of course, is not necessarily discharges from the vessels themselves, but the burden that the additional foot traffic in town has on community wastewater treatment facilities. And so that's some seasonal variation that you can see in the discharge from those wastewater treatment facilities that's due to the additional burden placed by visiting cruise ship passengers in port communities.
Thank you. We'll very much look forward to seeing that data.
Yes.
Other questions? Please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A little bit more on this year's, this past year's 2021 oversight. Again, like I said, we had the equivalent of three staff, one marine engineer and two program managers, 13 small vessels, 8 large vessels. We implemented DEC-led inspections on board all of those vessels. We were excited about this as an opportunity. We have not done that before. And what we saw is that the large vessels and the marine highway ferries were given a clean bill of health. This past season did not incur any discharge violations. We are very pleased to report that. However, the small vessels, and remember that's that smaller category of 50 to 249 berths, we found ample opportunity to critique their environmental performance this past year. Following these small vessel inspections, we articulated our expectations of their performance and their discharge numbers. We worked with those smaller vessels and the operators and owners. We worked with them to help them understand what the environmental protocols and practices are. We conducted follow-up meetings throughout the summer with them. They troubleshot their systems, and for the most part, they made improvements. They made some corrections. We articulated exactly what we expect out of the small vessels for the upcoming season in 2022, and we look forward to working with them this coming season as well. Okay. Looking forward to 2022. As of today, here's the hottest news off the press in terms of what we have looking forward to this season. We have 24 large vessels registered to come to the state of Alaska. That's not necessarily an indication of the finality. Those numbers are not due till March 1st, and we know that right now the majority of all of the fleet, both large vessels and small vessels, are prepping and figuring out their registration protocols and packages for coming to Alaska. So right now we have 24 signed up. We expect probably the entire fleet to be here with packed ships if they can. We'll know more March 1st. That's the deadline for the registration system. We will continue the preseason work that we normally do through the winter, through the spring. We'll be on board all vessels that are going to be operating in Alaska waters within those first couple weeks of the season. We anticipate getting on board those vessels immediately. We'll be conducting scheduled as well as unscheduled visits in port and underway inspections. So the majority of the inspections we'll be doing this coming year and the way we've scheduled it, they'll be in port, whether it's Homer, Whittier, Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan. Then as we see fit, we will schedule follow-up sessions, follow-up visits with those vessels, some of which will include underway. So we go port to port. Our staff will be on board watching how those discharge activities occur, which are generally evening underway discharges of wastewater. And in honor of Valentine's Day, it's fair to say the small vessels get the same inspection love as the large vessels. and that has not necessarily been the case. We will certainly take a view of them and work closely with them as well.
Okay, thank you.
Just to lay out some of the existing challenges that we've had, that we've noticed, we've recognized for the last several years, particularly the last couple as we really evaluated this program. DEC has had the ability to regulate and oversee commercial passenger vessels since the department was created in 1971. Specific CPV or commercial passenger vessel statutes were passed in 2001. They were amended in 2003, further amended by in 2006 with the passage of Ballot Measure 2. And what we've seen is the progressive development of those commercial passenger vessel specific laws, the passage of that Ballot Measure 2, and the implementation of the Ocean Ranger program was a clear message that Alaskans wanted DEC to improve our oversight of commercial passenger vessels and their environmental compliance. We've improved our oversight. We've continued to evaluate compliance. We've gained significant amount of experience and knowledge in what works, what we believe is effective, if there are gaps in coverage, and what could be improved in the most cost-effective manner. Collectively, the existing statutes and the implementation of those statutes included and required outdated information, inefficient reporting methods. They're difficult to adjust or adapt to when the treatment and monitoring programs improve. We recognize that the expensive Ocean Ranger program was essentially observers, writers. They provided reports to our office, and our DEC staff spent quite a bit of time in the office reviewing those reports. They're not necessarily on the ships. For several years, we've seen the fleet and the passenger loads increase in Alaska. I think everything we're hearing is that that's on the rise. They're filling up as much as they can. We know the majority of these passengers and the crew disembark in port, visit our shops and our shoreside attractions, and thankfully they create an economy, but they also leave waste that our communities must collect and treat. We know that our port communities are impacted by the commercial passenger vessels that use those onshore facilities, and all of these port communities could likely use some assistance to upgrade those treatment facilities to improve their wastewater discharge, and most importantly, their water quality effluent.
Really.
Senator Kawasaki.
Thanks. Thanks for going through the history, Director. Were there any significant or modified changes since the 2006 ballot initiative passed on the passenger vessel environmental compliance program?
Through the chair, Senator. To the best of my knowledge, we have not had a statutory revision at all, let alone substantive, since 2006.
And then just follow up. Or any regulatory changes that are noteworthy?
Again, through the chair, Senator, I'm not aware of any regulatory changes that we've made, particularly that have been substantive, that would have addressed the commercial passenger vessel groups.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Okay.
Senator Keel?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. That may need a little more research. I think there was work on the small vessels and what level of plan they were required to submit, and then I think the end of pipe standard, especially when it comes to metals. I don't have the details, but maybe if I could make a special request of the director to look back at that a little bit and get us some additional research.
Yeah, do you need clarification on the question?
Mr. Chair, members, the question, as I heard it, was specific to the regulations that we have for commercial passenger vessels. Those, we have a particular package of regulations, a chapter of those regulations. We also have chapters of regulations that deal specifically with water quality that all industries are subject to, regardless of whether it's a commercial passenger vessel, large or small, a mining industry, or a publicly owned treatment facility. So if I hear the question correctly, it's what changes have you made specifically that address the CPV industry, as opposed to what changes have you made that address water quality for all industries? Is that a fair assumption?
So it was kind of your question. through the chair, I think I'd like both, because I do remember those changes in effluent quality that came out. And that was when we were, it was 2008, I think, or 2009.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, will provide that analysis for you.
Yep. Thank you very much. Questions?
Okay.
All right, please continue.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Proposed changes. So very simply, what this bill does is simplify statutory directives to provide greater flexibility for the department to set specific standards by regulation. We are planning to lift a number of these sections that are currently embedded in the statutes and move them into regulation. What that does is give us a little more flexibility and adaptability to manage an industry that where technology can change quicker than our statutory programs can. So flexibility there. Strengthen, clarify our authority for staff to board and inspect commercial passenger vessels in Alaska. This will also some cleanup and clarifying edits to ensure compliance with environmental laws and make sure that some of the experiences and clarifications that we've seen through our compliance program are captured in the language here. We are incorporating technology, which we're encouraging the development of electronic real-time monitoring for discharge monitoring. Timely and formatted reporting will allow DEC to spot areas of concern quicker for easier response. There's a couple provisions in there that provide that. One of the major components, we're replacing multiple fees. There's a matrix of fees in one of the sections of the existing statute. We're replacing those multiple fees and the complex matrix with a single fee of $5 per berth, per lower berth, per voyage for all vessels, small or large. This bill is repealing the Ocean Ranger program. And we're also establishing a grant program to help finance wastewater infrastructure improvements for port communities serving these commercial passenger vessels and their passengers. The bill has a zero fiscal note with a slight revenue increase associated with the application of berth fees specific to the small vessels. I'm happy to talk through that if there's any questions on that. Recognizing the change and potential impact on those increased revenue fees, but it's in a program that brings in berth fees about somewhere between $6 and $8 million. That change that I'm talking about, that increase, is about $100,000, 80 of which is coming from the small commercial passenger vessels. Recognizing that change and the potential impact, we built in a delayed effective date for those changing berth fees specific to the small CPVs. That'll go into effect in 2024 so as to minimize their financial impact. I switch slides, Mr. Chair. What will not change, I'll run through some components of the existing statutes that will not change. We absolutely retain authority for inspections, onboard inspections. Our registration system that I mentioned earlier, which is when vessels let us know when they're coming to Alaska and how many voyages they're making, how many passengers they're bringing. That's not changing. The air emission monitoring program run through our Division of Air is not changing. Our general permit for large commercial passenger vessels is still in effect. We will continue that, that permit. Discharging vessels are required to get that if they're going to be in Alaska waters and they're going to be discharging. We have small commercial passenger requirements that will not be changing with this bill. We intend to implement those as we have been. Our sampling and reporting requirements will not be changing for the vessels. They are still required to sample within 10 days of arriving in Alaska. We look at those and we communicate with them on what those sampling results look like. We are not changing what they can and cannot discharge. They cannot discharge wastewater without a permit and without treatment. And we're also retaining the recognition program that's currently in statute, and so we can honor and recognize outstanding companies, individuals, folks that are, for whatever reason, the commissioner would like to acknowledge them and give them congratulations. We did that earlier this year on the 20th anniversary of Shore Power. I believe it was the city and Princess was the award. The accolades went to that company who developed, with in conjunction with the city and borough of Juneau, the hookup for shore power, which reduced their dependency on their own generators, reduced some air emissions, and was overall a very good product at the end of the day.
I'd like to welcome Senator Michicki to the committee. Please continue. We do have a question. Go ahead, Senator Kawasaki.
Thanks. Thank you, Director. In Section 3 of the bill, it changes the word sewage, gray water, or other wastewaters to just wastewater. Is there a difference between those three and the one, or is it just to further clarify it's any water that's being discharged?
Through the chair, Senator, you're right. We are changing the term, and it's actually captured throughout here in a number of different sections. The terms gray water, sewage, we're making clarifying edits to say that wastewater is gray water, black water, and other wastewater that might be out there. And there was different terms used throughout the existing statute, and this is just meant to be a clarifying definition. You'll see further back there's definitions that are also removed specific to this, just so that wastewater is the term of art used through here, and it captures all of those effluents that we're concerned about.
Thank you.
Yes.
Senator, through the chair, if you look in Section 16, you'll see that there's a definition for wastewater added that captures gray water and sewage as well, so that there's consistency in terminology throughout the section.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have a question quick here, since we've been talking a lot about Ocean Rangers here. I'm just curious, in your estimation, has the Ocean Ranger program been successful? And maybe you could speak to why or why not. What's the department's position there?
Sure. Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. Ocean Rangers were put in place by the ballot initiative back in 2006. And as I mentioned earlier, it was a recognition that the residents of Alaska wanted the State Department to take a harder look to manage the effluent or the discharges that are coming out of those cruise ships with a little more significance. We have taken the last couple years, I think the Ocean Rangers went in place 2006. The expectation was that they were on all the large vessels, not the small ones, but the large vessels. And they oversaw or they observed activities that were occurring on those vessels. They had a chart of what their obligations were on a daily basis. The state ended up paying for berth space on those vessels to provide lodging for the Ocean Rangers. That amounted to about $3.5 million a year, every year. At the end of the day, what the Ocean Rangers provided was not inspection or enforcement capacity, but oversight. They provided reports to the department on what they saw. The department then took a look at those. If there were anything of particular concern, immediately we reacted, because we have the authority to act and enforce our laws. The ocean observers didn't. They served an important purpose at a critical time. As we evaluated $3.5 million a year over the course of 12 years, more than $40 million. We looked at whether they were continuing to provide a meaningful, cost-effective service that couldn't be otherwise duplicated. And we feel at this point that the Ocean Rangers served a purpose. There were no gaps in our enforcement or our coverage that they provided. And we felt that at this point it was better that we move on from Ocean Rangers. We have a clear, robust, rigorous program in place with our inspectors and our marine engineers, and we think that that is the most effective way to continue to manage the industry. Importantly as well is the money that was spent on an annual basis for the marine engineer or the Ocean Rangers. It's not directly equivalent because there's the fund source changes, but we believe that the communities at $3.5 million could make a better use of that money treating and improving their own wastewater discharges. And so that's the other piece that we built into this bill. Okay. They served a purpose. We feel that there were no gaps in coverage or in enforcement or authority, and we have a rigid structure in place to move forward to manage the commercial passenger vessels at this point. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Okay, please continue.
Thank you. The next slide, Mr. Chair members, is just a subset of what that matrix looked like in the statute. And this is just to give you an idea. There's a couple different funds that are associated with this. The commercial passenger vessel environmental compliance fee that was established in 2001. That's to fund the oversight that we had. And then the Ocean Ranger program fee was established in 2006 to fund the onboard observer program. Only the large vessels were subject to that Ocean Ranger fee. Everybody else was subject to CPVEC. Again, like I said, we just simplify that to a 4+1 is essentially a $5 berth fee. That's how it shook out. Section 9 of the bill is where we talk about that particular proposed fee structure. Simplified fee, all vessels are going to pay $5. I mentioned earlier, it's relatively, it's a zero fiscal note from the department, but there is a slight fee increase, about $17,000 increase for the large vessels that are currently paying about $6.8 million in fees, berth fees. Small vessels will pay more. They're going to be up to about an increase of about $80,000, bringing them to pretty close. They currently, up to date, only pay $18,000 a year as an entire fleet. So this will be an increase for the small vessels. We're offering a $1 reduction for electronic monitoring. So instead of a $5 fee, if they have something that we can work with that is an electronic monitoring program that has a clear connection to their port discharges, we would give them a $1 reduction in their berth fees. And then another thing we heard in our conversations with the vessels is that at the end of the year, particularly related to COVID, they were looking for the opportunity to rebate or true up at the end of the year what their berth space looked like. So if they pay for 1,000 berths March 1st, but at the end of the year, the CDC said they could only have half capacity, we didn't feel it was appropriate to hold them responsible. We're allowing them to true up at the end of the year and get a rebate back from the state if they don't fill all their berths.
Oh, we have a question from Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that's a little bit of a surprise. I had thought this was a per passenger fee in the first place, so I had assumed there was a true up. I guess a question about the electronic monitoring system. Do we have a sense, does the department have a sense in working with the industry of whether that $1, letting them keep a dollar of what their passengers put in is sufficient to install and to operate the kind of valve monitoring systems that you envision making this program work well? I mean, I can pencil out, you know, 2,400 passengers and 14 voyages and how many years. But the industry presumably has a better sense of this. Have you had those conversations?
Mr. Chair, Senator, through the chair, I haven't had those particular conversations about electronic monitoring and that $1 fee with the industry in the last year. I think that was a conversation maybe the deputy and the commissioner have had previously. This is an incentive. It's not a solve-all. It's something that we would love the industry to get behind, but it's driven by the industry. We can take the data, but as we it's got to be structured in a way that we can use it, and that's critically important, and the industry needs to be willing to provide it too. Our understanding, and again, like I said, I haven't had the particular conversation, but my understanding is it would take, you know, when you start putting open-closed electronic monitoring on a variety of different ports or valves or openings, that takes a little bit of effort, it takes a little bit of money, and a little bit, I don't know exactly what that is. is the $1 incentive enough to offset that? It's an incentive. At $1, which is 20% of the fees, it could be amounting to a million, you know, $1.5 million a year for the fleet, for the large fleet. So it's possible. Deputy?
Senator, through the chair. Another piece of this is that my understanding is we don't actually have the authority under federal law to require something like this. And so because we can't require it, offering an incentive is kind of the best that we can do at this point. But of course, we still want to have the inspection program and the funding for that in place. So we're not proposing in the bill to waive the fee entirely in hopes of making more financial resources available to them for the monitoring. But given that we can't require it, offering some incentive was the next best thing.
If I could add one more piece, Senator, through the chair. We currently gather information on their long time date stamps, where they're at, where they've been. So that's they're obligated to provide that information to us. We have it accessible through one of the servers that's out there. This would be an add-on to that, which isn't just a simple add-on. We went and met with the Marine Exchange recently, and it was obviously a fruitful conversation, and they have a lot of technology there. But we have a bit of information. We can recreate it if we need to. But when you get into, okay, the pipe opened, what we really need to know is, what's that flow rate? What's that discharge? What pipe is it? There's a lot of additional information that matters for us to be able to get it, sort of the science behind why we want the data. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't want to give the Deputy Commissioner the impression that I thought this sort of automated system was a replacement for inspections. As the director suggests, we need to know where the valve goes. If the incentive is so small as not to make a difference, we don't get the benefit of automation. If it is much bigger than it needs to be, we're subsidizing, we're giving something away. So I'm trying to get a sense of how this is pegged to give the state of Alaska one piece of a much broader overall monitoring program, but that piece is on 24/7 if we can get it.
Understood.
Yeah, can you please get that to us? Or is that a comment, Senator Keel? Or
Mr. Chairman, that was a comment. Thank you. I'm happy to work with the department a little further on the scope and the scale, and maybe talk to some of the folks in the industry about, you know, if it's 37 grand to ship a year and the system costs 50 grand to install, might be a little rich. If it costs $1 million to install, it's not an incentive at all.
Right. Thank you, Senator Keel. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking along the same line. So I may be wrong, but I'm thinking the instrumentation and the data points may not be a lot different between large and small vessels, but the incremental cost for a smaller vessel is going to be much higher. Have you spent much time with the industry to see if there needs to be that the incentive needs to be larger for smaller vessels than larger vessels? And I mean, have you gotten any feedback from the industry? Because I definitely think that would be far superior for a fully automated monitoring system. I would think in the long term it would save you all a lot of labor costs for inspection and things like that. But how have those conversations gone? Or are you just, is it something that you put the bill together and maybe you have some more work to do on meeting with vessel operators?
Sure. Mr. Vice Chair, through the chair. We haven't, let's see. I think that's a fair question that's directed to the industry. We've had this provision in the bill for a couple years now. It was in there 2 years ago when this was in the previous bodies. And there is very little discussion about that from any parts, whether it was enough, whether it was too much. I'll certainly go back and ask that question. I will say the vessels from the small versus large. Their treatment facilities are vastly different. On the small vessels, the 50 to 249 berths, they operate what's called marine sanitation devices. And so they operate those in accordance with the marine sanitation, how they're manufactured. The expectation of that is that, here's a good example. The expectation there is that the marine sanitation devices are going to operate and treat the effluent to about 200 fecal units, fecal colony forming units per 100 milliliters of water. That's the best that those small vessels can do. They have smaller systems, they're smaller vessels, they're the smaller ones we see out here, not the big that are lightered out. They probably can give us that information by writing it down. When they're going to open their pipes, they're just going to write down, okay, we're at this lat, this long, and we open the pipes for 1 hour while we discharge at this point. What we're talking about is something that is more meaningful in an electronic manner, where it just gets ported into us. That's not an easy setup from our end, let alone from the vessel's end. And when you then expand that to the large vessels, they have multiple ballast tanks, holding tanks, treatment tanks. They're moving things around as we understand it. It becomes critically important that we can map those pipes and then monitor them for opening, closing, and flow rates. So it becomes a incremental challenge. I'm not advocating against it. We certainly want to see it, but I've just been advised on what some of the challenges are and what the costs might be. But again, that's a question that I think would be wonderfully posed to the industry if they choose to be here.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, my simple statement is monetizing the cost of a system over 5,000 passengers is going to be significantly different than over a couple hundred. And it just may be worth having that discussion. You may need to be richer with a smaller vessel than a larger vessel, but I reviewed the bill. We talked about the bill, largely supportive. I just, on the details of the cost structure, if I don't know that you've had those discussions and it's somewhat defensible, there may be a reason you're not hearing much. And it may be the reason that there's no way in heck that they're thinking of making that level of investment, because you might not have the right price point on it. And so it'd be nice to have that feedback, the two-way discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Other questions? Please continue.
We're moving along, Mr. Chair, members. And I think for me, in terms of water quality and the nerdy science behind it, we're getting excited here. So as I mentioned previously, in the absence of commercial passenger vessels, we did have some high concentrations of bacteria, particularly human-based material, observed at several ports. And we recognize, as the deputy had said earlier, with that CPV or commercial passenger vessel traffic, local port community treatment facility exceedances are often coincided with seasonal influx and high traffic of those of commercial passenger vessel passengers and traffic. It appears there is a direct correlation between the communities and what some of their exceedances are for their discharges. So what we've got in this graph, and I think this was put together a couple years ago, if you actually count those dots, there's 40 units in that one, 1.5 million in the other. Our cruise ships are obligated by both federal law and state to treat through their advanced wastewater systems to a water discharge water quality number of 40 fecal colony forming units per 100 milliliters. That's their standard. That's the expectation. As I mentioned, the smaller vessels treat to at best about 200 fecal units. What we've got, and this is a matrix of some of our own communities that are out there. So, and this is not meant to disparage the communities. We have authorized them, or EPA has authorized them, to discharge at this level. It's just a recognition that there are challenges associated with water quality and a disparity of how we treat our own publicly owned treatment facilities versus what we expect out of the industry that we manage. So you see some significant numbers in there. Comparative level 40 on the cruise vessels, 800 fecal units at Juneau, 800 at Ward Cove. Under what's called a 301H waiver facility, Charcoal Point and Ketchikan discharges at 1.25 million fecal units on a daily basis. Sitka and Skagway are both authorized to discharge at 1.5 million fecal units per day.
I have a quick question.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So do the cruise ships, because they are so low, is it, without knowing the science or the technology behind it, when it's filtered out, the sediment gets held in the cruise ship, you know, holding tank until they reach land, and then it gets deposited into a landfill? I mean, if it's only 40 versus 1.5 million, where does the other 1.4,900,000 and whatever 60 pieces
go? Where
do
those pots go?
Yeah.
Mr. Through the chair, Senator, there is an offloading process, but it's primarily accomplished. So we've got different levels of treatment. Primary treatment only is the simplest method. Then we've got disinfection that adds on to that. And that can be something as simple as a chlorine compound addition or ultraviolet light. That is significantly impactful to the bacterial levels of the fecal unit numbers. Then we've got secondary treatment, which is that next level of treatment that really does a better job of cleaning things up. That is our baseline standard in Alaska, except for these 301H waiver facilities. Everybody else who is a treatment system must produce at the secondary level. You then get, and that gets us to about that 200 level. These vessels, these large vessels, they have advanced wastewater treatment systems, which even go beyond that. They're tertiary. They provide more treatment, whether it's filtration or additional ultraviolet radiation or whatever it is. It kills off the fecal in a significant way. Yeah. And there's a huge, many of our facilities have what's called a mixing zone associated with some of their discharges. And when you talk about fecal, you can have a modeling will show that some mixing zones will be 100 miles in radius. Simple treatment of chlorine or disinfection of some sort, ultraviolet, can reduce that discharge, the area that they'll still be viable, down to 100 yards. That's just massively effective. So,
questions? Please continue.
We're getting there. And so Section 13 of the bill, this becomes a real critical piece, exciting. A portion of those berth fees will be used to support improvements to the wastewater treatment facilities in our port communities. The grant program is established. We'll develop regulations as the department necessary to implement a competitive-based award or grant with a primary focus of protecting or improving public health and water quality, or mitigating any environmental impacts caused by the commercial passenger vessels or their passengers. So what we're looking at, just numbers-wise, if it costs $3.5 to $4 million to run the oversight of the commercial passenger vessels, the berth fees bring in somewhere between $6 and $8 million. There's a significant portion, $3 to $4 million a year, that we can put towards this grant program to provide some assistance to our port communities to improve their wastewater treatment facilities. At the end of the day, it's better water quality, better effluent coming out of our own communities, assisting them, importantly, with the very passenger traffic that is kind of challenging them to treat the water at a reasonable level. So, members of the committee, thank you so much for having us here today, hearing this bill. Happy to answer any additional questions that you have. Thank you.
Additional questions? Senator Machicki.
Yeah, just for a little history, and I know probably Senator Akil and Kawasaki remember this, but so the initiative passed, and then it became time to go from tertiary to zero discharge with no mixing zone at the point of discharge, and we changed that requirement in statute probably 2014 or 15 or something like that. And one of the reasons that we did that is the 301H waiver levels of fecal allowable fecal colonies just seemed unfair. So I'm really excited about part of this being used to improve the performance of the waived communities. Not sure that there's enough funding for the number one waived community in the state, but it might give us a business model for the city that has essentially secondary treatment for 300,000 plus people. But I think it's a really unique way to look at this. I appreciate the approach.
Thank you, Senator Machicki, Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, I'm just, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just reading through the bill. It talks about in Section 7 of the bill, if the commercial passenger vehicle is complying with another state or federal law, and then substantially equivalent was taken out, but then it comes back in, information gathering, gathered information that's substantially equivalent. I guess my question is, are there states that require substantial equivalent information to be given?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, my understanding is that there may be similar information that's reported to, say, the Coast Guard or another regulatory entity. And so rather than having the same data and information be reproduced in different formats, we'll take it in the format that it's been prepared for the Coast Guard or another fellow regulatory entity.
And then follow up. And I guess we'll have to look it up. It's substantially equivalent is somehow a term of art also, or if it's used in other areas of law. Because at the time that we had the big debate over the mixing zones and effluent, we did have, I mean, this is what I remember, is that we had the strictest rules that applied. And I'm just wondering if there are other places that are now more strict or less strict than we are.
Through the chair, Senator, this is about, I will say, Section 7 is specifically about information that we request. It's not necessarily, certainly not about the standards that we apply to their discharge numbers. I think we are, if not equivalent to the federal oversight, we have our own ability to manage sewage, gray water in Alaska, essentially wastewater. And so we can set those standards as we see fit. IMO, I can't remember off the top of my head off what IMO stands for. International Maritime Organization. Also, there's federal law that's out there that controls, federal or international law that controls additional discharges from some of these vessels that are international in nature. We're also recognizing and we're working with the federal law that's now working through its implementation called Vessel Incidental Discharge Act, or VITA for short. And so we recognize that this is networking with that federal law, and we're making sure that we still retain our discretion and our authority over managing the cruise vessels in the state and the wastewater that they discharge. So this was the question you raised particularly is meant to be a clarifying edit. Again, there was not intention of substantial change here or substantive change, but we're happy to continue to look at that if there remains concern.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions, Senator Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While we were talking, I looked back at the definition section on wastewater that we were pointed to earlier. It would seem to write out any ballast discharges, which I think the earlier language would have covered. Am I misunderstanding that?
Senator Keel, through the chair, my understanding is that ballast water is kind of outside the scope of what we have the authority to regulate under federal law. But what we're saying is if you put, there's not a loophole where you can put your wastewater into ballast and then discharge it and call it ballast water. So it's meant to close off that kind of loophole. But generally, I don't think we would be looking at ballast water directly. It's only if it's the wastewater that's been sort of rerouted, then we would still, it would still be under our regulatory authority.
Thank you. I have a question on a different line.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I need a little bit of a refresher. We have the general permit for the large ships. Mr. Chairman, the director talked about the small ships and work on getting their mini treatment facilities to operate at the treatment level they're capable of. Do we have a standard for the small ships? Do we have a permit for the small ships? How is that addressed now, and what would shift here?
Right. Through the chair, Senator Keel. We do have in regulation the requirement that they operate under best management practices, and we review their alternative plans being non-permitted but otherwise approved by DEC. So we look at what their operational plans are, how they're going to treat their water, and how they're going to discharge. The expectation is that they treat to a level that that marine sanitation device allows them to. And that is set by Coast Guard rules. And so MSDs, marine sanitation devices, are supposed to treat to a level 200 fecal units, colony treating units. That is what we expect those vessels to try and get to. We recognize that that is a target that is set. We have not necessarily seen them nail that number. So what we saw this past year was the vessels that came in that had been mothballed in the close down of COVID. You know, they put the vessels in storage. There was not a lot of cleanup done just because of the dynamics of what COVID was and whether you could get folks to work. They came back up, and their numbers for fecal unit were particularly high. And all vessels, large and small, are expected to sample their treatment facilities, their tanks, within 10 days of arrival in Alaskan waters and share those results with us. We looked at those and went, these are too high. We need to work with you. And so we, quite honestly, the small vessels, we met individually with the small vessels after we got their results and said, this is not acceptable for operating in Alaska. What are you doing about it? What is your current action plan? And we worked with them individually to make sure that they were addressing our concerns and what their expected discharges were supposed to be. Some of them were high. We worked to get them down closer to what that MSD level is required or what the expectation or target is. Senator?
Thank you.
Does that heal what ails you, Senator?
It answers my question.
Any other questions? All right. Are you complete?
Mr. Chair, we are. Just Senator Bishop.
For the record, Senator Bishop has joined us. Thank you, Senator Bishop. We're gonna move on to public testimony here in a second. Do we have one last time any additional questions? Again, we're gonna set this aside so we can take a look at it. None? All right. Public testimony is now open on SB 180. Is there anybody online or in the room who would like to testify? Thank you again. You guys can step away. Appreciate it very much. Thank you for your willingness to testify. All right, we do have one. Ma'am, if you could please come forward, put yourself on the record, and give us 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. We're back in committee. My name is Carla Hart, and I am testifying as an individual. I've been following the cruise industry for almost 40 years and supported the passage of the 2006 initiative to create the Ocean Ranger Program. I also was active in the Parnell administration era rollbacks of components of the cruise initiative. And in 2 minutes, I don't have time to get through everything. I'd like to point out that the three major cruise corporations, which are represented in Alaska, all have engaged in illegal processes relating to dumping things into waters, and all three have pled guilty in federal court to multiple violations. For two of those companies, the use of so-called magic pipes, which bypass regulation, were a big component, and those were across multiple vessels, showing a corporate culture. Carnival Corporation, which owns Princess Holland America, Carnival Cruise Line, and others, is on active probation still for violations, including violations which were caught by Alaska Ocean Rangers. They continue to violate their probation. I have a copy of a letter that I'll give to staff afterwards for you on their latest probation hearing. They have a culture of violations that they have not reformed during the time that they have been under probation. And Judge Seitz in Florida has now requires them to come, the corporate CEOs, to come in person to her courtroom for each hearing and has threatened them individually and the companies collectively with arrest if they don't shape up. You have a recidivist criminal that you're dealing with Carnival Corporation brands. So having an Alaska Ocean Ranger on board those ships is critical. DEC talks a lot about fecal matter, and fecal matter is certainly important and we care about it, but the industries have also been dumping oily and toxic wastes and other things that are not to be dumped under any conditions. And having eyes on board for Alaskans is why Alaskans voted for the cruise ship initiative and why we voted to have the Ocean Rangers on board. I am really concerned that this is sort of slipping through. I only caught this today by chance on something else. The governor's office issued no press release that they had introduced this bill, though they had two other press releases the day of introduction. People don't know that this is going on. I urge you to hold the bill and to put into English language and get the word out that you're considering this so that the residents of Alaska have a chance to speak on it. The existing program has been revenue neutral to the state of Alaska. The DEC's advocacy for cost effective is a little bit ironic because we're collecting money from the cruise passengers and then buying cruise berths at full rack rate back from the cruise industry. So they're actually making money on this, except for the fact that they have eyes on board that catch them violating laws that result in millions of dollars of penalties. We need to have the Ocean Rangers on the ship. In 2 minutes, I can't do much more. I will bring some information around to your offices next week, but I really urge you to slow down on this and to give a chance for Alaskans to weigh in. It's not just about fecal matter. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Harden. As you know, we encourage your submission of written testimony to the committee, and I think you know how to do that. Yes. So if you have more, feel free to send it to the committee so we can distribute it.
Thank you.
All right. Any other public testimony in the room? There's none online. We're going to close public testimony. Public testimony on SB 180 is now closed. Do we have any other questions or comments before we set this aside and wrap up? Seeing none, thank you very much again to our presenters from the department. We appreciate you being here today. And the committee members, thank you for your attention. Our next regularly scheduled meeting will be this coming Wednesday, February 16th, 2022. We're going to review SB 121, which is PFAS and remediation fire water safety, sponsored by the senator from District Q. This meeting is now adjourned at 4:37 p.m.